Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, thank you for all that you provide us with. Thank you for your plan of salvation through Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen. So very often, we get all caught up in the moment, and usually it has to do with some kind of a trouble that we're facing. It might be a family situation, or a fire, a flood, or sometimes a medical problem. They just clobber us, if that's the way it feels. And then all of our attention and all of our resources go to that area of need. That's just how life goes. And life goes on, life continues, so that after a time, after we are done looking at a situation and we're tired, maybe exhausted, we finally seek that which is important in life. We seek God. We pay attention to our eternal life, and that is the center of our focus. We each have an opportunity to grasp one thing or another at different points in our life, and we accept or do not accept that which we are faced with. These situations develop us in whatever it is we're facing, whether it's fires, floods, or personal problems, family problems. They can draw us closer to God or further away from God. We are on a certain journey. And at times I have pondered these things and asked, why do we need these difficulties to draw us closer to God? Why don't we just have good times? And I think we need the difficulties to help us to examine what is around us, to become aware, and to think about our position in all this, and to see that we are not quite adequate to deal with whatever trouble we face. And that leads to a dependency on God. We learn to depend on God. But, you know, we all have a different life experience. We know that. And still, in one way or another, we ask questions. Even the most basic questions like, is there a God? And did Jesus really live? And what about the short-term or the long-term consequences? Or the eternal consequences? Hey, and how can I be forgiven? I think we all ask those kind of questions at one point or another in our life. And then what happens? We seek the answers, and we turn to God when we need more information. And we have a Jesus-centered life, and that is the born-again experience. We seem to all get to that point one way or another. And I know that I've heard from teens and from young and middle and older people, we all have this in front of us as to determine what life means and where we're going with it. I know about a year ago, I was talking to a man who was about 70-something years old, and he just had an understanding. You see, wait a minute, he'd been a Christian all of his life. And then last year, he had a born-again experience, and he said, this is amazing. God is amazing. God through Jesus Christ. That was a part of his testimony about that born-again experience. Because, well, we all know this. The old life is gone, and the focus of life is no longer to do with, oh, things in the past or things about sins. And doesn't the Bible say it does, that it is no longer I who live, but it is Christ who lives in me? We surrender all to Jesus Christ. So we have examples in the Bible about people who have surrendered their life to Jesus Christ. And there's the Book of Martyrs, too, that talks about what has happened to people in their life and how they surrendered all to Jesus. And we're so happy and thrilled about it. That is just that was their joy. Now to live with Jesus Christ living inside of them. Well, we all have a different experience. Every one of us is different. Whatever our age is, whatever our situation. And sure, we could have years pursuing the intellectual understanding. That's what happened to me. And finally, I got understanding of God and Jesus, and it changes your life. But some people have a much different and immediate understanding of that born-again experience. And I marvel at the people who have a quick experience. Like, have you heard about the Muslims in the Islamic countries where they have, for instance, a vision of Jesus, and instantly their belief is changed. They are born again, and they believe in Jesus, and they're ready to live and to die for Jesus Christ. And some of them do have a Christian martyr's death because of their strong faith in Jesus Christ. And I marvel at the differences we all have. Our circumstances in life are different. Everything can be different for each one of us. But we all can have a similar experience in that born-again moment when we choose to turn to God and recognize that this is God through Jesus Christ and with the Holy Spirit. And yet there will be other people who will have difficulties, and they don't turn to God. They turn towards this world, things that this world has to offer, and difficulties just seem to turn you one way or the other, to God or away from God. And we each make that choice. I know there's so many distractions in the world that it just takes our attention. Yes, like I said, to God or from God. And it's just a matter of you investigate it and you look, and we pray that life situations, the painful things in life, turn you to God, whether they're personal relationships or lately there have been fires in other parts of the country, there's floods and certainly personal conflicts. So that, and like I said, the fires are a big thing. They're going on right now around us. And surely we think about them. We think about the effects that they have on your life and mine, and that we keep a perspective, the perspective that stays Christ-focused. And of course, we're aware of the things that go on around us, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. We're aware of all these things when we're walking and driving around, and we pay attention to what we're doing. That's the physical aspect of life. And we listen to what's going on around us. We pay attention, and we try to relate all these things to God and Jesus. And sometimes it's a challenge to relate life to God. But I think there's always these three things that we can kind of remember to put into the equation of how we examine the issues. When we remember God of the Bible, when we remember the forces of this world, and when we remember and examine our own personal life. I think these are the different things that we can look at to try to put things into a perspective that we can understand. We try to figure it out, and of course, we ask for God's grace to help us to understand. Our faith helps to refine us and define us. Our faith is in God of the Bible. And that's where we want to stay focused. Other people have other faith, and sometimes it's faith in science. With evolution, it says we evolved from monkeys, and before that we came from water and dirt. Oh, well, everyone's entitled to their view. And I think about the people who have this point of view that we have evolved, and I think about the elite people in this world also. See, they believe in evolution very strongly. And why? Because they are at the top of this so-called evolutionary chain. And therefore, they have the power and the authority to make decisions for themselves and for the people who are, in their eyes, lesser people. And they don't have any moral constraints upon them, because to them, there is no God. It is only what they think, because they have evolved to the top of that so-called pyramid. Yes, for them there is no God. Their decision is supreme to them because they are at the top of that evolutionary structure. They are superior. Well, all the rest of us, all the rest of us ordinary human beings, well, we're just ordinary and they're special. So, we try to make sense of the world and understand it. And it's sometimes difficult because some things just don't make sense. Have you noticed? We try to understand and they just don't. I mean, you look around and you look at the disasters around us, natural disasters, human disasters. Why? They just put us into a quandary as we try to understand what our ordinary lives are bringing about. So many things happen. We seek discernment. We try to find what is true and what is untrue. And we get perspectives by asking questions and seeing how other people would view it. That's another one. Or we could ask, how would the legal system view this? Because that's another perspective all by itself. The legal point of view, yeah. It takes something to be an attorney or involved in the legal system. And if you're dealing with attorneys, you get to try to figure out your argument and how do you prove that something is true or untrue. And we get that as we go through life, because there are going to be people who question us just about the ordinary things, or they might question us, how can you believe in God? How can you believe in Jesus? How can you prove that he was alive? And this is a part of what we do to interact with the people in the world. But it is an interesting question. How do you demonstrate proof? How do you demonstrate that you understand? Where is your evidence? Show me the videotape. Or show me the words. Is it written down? Is it in a book? Well, we know in recent years we have seen words changed, and we have even seen videotapes that have been changed. Because people, I mean the technical people, they can create just about anything. So yes, I ask again, what is the evidence? Where is your proof? And how can you satisfy a person who asks that kind of a question? Because for so many things, you just have to have the understanding. You have to look into something and find out what is sensible. And there's all sorts of things everywhere that just don't really make sense. Look at the car fire in Reading. I remember first hearing about that, and they said, yes, a car started that fire, and that's why they named it the car fire. Well, there's more than one answer to all these things. But what I was saying, wanted to say about that car fire in Reading was that there are burn patterns that do not make sense. And how do you prove one thing or another? Because there are people who have reported on that fire, who have taken videos of the fire here and there, and there are anomalies all over the place, things that just don't make sense. They are out of the ordinary, abnormal, should not happen, but there they are, You see them on video. The burn patterns of that fire were sometimes so irrational that you couldn't make it up. If you had a big imagination, you could not make up the burn patterns that were observed. It's beyond understanding. It's beyond reasonable. So, for instance, if you look at the house fires, you will see that some house fires are burned, have burned the house to a crisp, and there's only ashes that have remained. Well, in the past, house fires have always left charred lumber behind. It's just a question. How do we show one thing or another? Houses completely burned up, even the steel framed appliances, they're gone completely, or even something with glass in it, even the glass is completely gone, burned up. Oh, and speaking of burned up, there's burned up cars, burned up rubber tires, things in the garage. Now, these patterns always also existed in the Santa Rosa fire and the fires around Santa Rosa that happened at the same time. All this year, these fires were all this year, and it was said that it was done because of high winds that the fire got so hot. High winds in the night, but nobody witnessed them. Now, fires do have a wind pattern, and that's evident, but it's not the same as a high wind. I simply say questions are raised, and we don't have good answers. All we have is anomalies, anomalies that don't make sense. They're abnormal. So even the high winds, we see the different evidences. For instance, on one side of the street, you will see garbage cans blown over and scattered. Just the regular old garbage cans scattered. That's on one side of the street, but the other side of the street, the garbage cans are all in order, right next to where the house used to stand. And in both cases, tree limbs have fallen down, big fallen oak branches. So there's inconsistencies, and that's what I'm calling anomalies. They're not normal. And there are numerous anomalies. For instance, I saw news coverage and it showed that there was shrubbery right next to where a house had burned down. Shrubs and trees. And you just wonder, how could it happen that the tree didn't get all completely burned down when the house did? And they weren't very far from each other. So I'm just trying to understand this, make sense of it, and it doesn't make sense how some houses could be burned down completely and the trees right next to them could hardly have any effects of the fire, while there was glass and steel that did melt and you just don't get it. There was pictures of a car that had aluminum wheels, and that aluminum wheel had melted, rubber tire and all, but the aluminum on the wheel had melted and was running down the garage or driveway. It doesn't make sense. That hot a fire and the trees didn't get burned? Well, I don't know. But as I've looked into it and looked at temperatures, I can see there is a certain wiggle room that could happen, and there are explanations. It's just that I don't see them. Maybe you do. Maybe it'll get explained to me in a way that I can finally make sense of it. But for this, at this point, I don't see it. I have questions that just are not explained. So, let's ask the questions and find the answers and try to understand, because this is not the only fires, the ones in California, that have this anomaly. There have been fires in earlier years across the country. North Carolina, Colorado, New Mexico. They've all had these similar kind of fires where the houses were burned to a crisp and nothing remained. It just, that is not my experience of house fires. So maybe a fire marshal knows better. Let's look at all the answers and try to figure this out. I know that there were other very surprising things that the videotapes would show of how a house, some part of it, like half of it, was burned to a crisp and the other half of the house was left standing. Didn't make sense. I know one of the videos, it was in the eastern part of the country. I can't remember right now where it was, but there was a football kind of a field and half of it was blackened with the grass and the greenery, and the other half of the field was still in its natural green, and it was a straight line. It, again, doesn't make sense. I can't make sense of it. So, I am very glad to get feedback, though. If you have ideas, I surely would like to know and try to figure it out, because there's things that don't make sense. Just like the anomalies of 9/11 event in New York City, there were things in that didn't make sense either. Oh, and by the way, that event also had cars parked on a nearby street, and some of them had half of the line of cars were melted and the other half were not. It's just a puzzle. How can a line of cars be seemingly melted with the tires and the paint, but the other half not? It just, another thing that didn't make sense. What kind of a world do we have? I don't know. But 9/11 was a bizarre event with those twin towers that just seemed to disappear into thin air instead of falling over in a huge crash and a mess of materials. Just questions. How did those towers just seem to disappear? Good question. I don't have the answer. And about that 9/11 event, I still don't see how a thin aluminum could penetrate a steel outer core of a skyscraper. Airplanes are flimsy. You didn't have any wings falling off. You didn't have the tail falling off and falling onto the street below. It just didn't make sense. Oh, and then you can look at the Pentagon. The Pentagon is a hardened building. It physically is hard. And yet that airplane went through the little hole. No wings, no tail section. Again, how can you make sense of these events that don't make sense? And then you have the FBI going around the Pentagon and confiscating every single private camera that would have shown the airplane hitting the Pentagon. No, it just, things don't make sense. No black boxes were ever made public. And in fact, my recollection is two of them were found, but that means six of them disappeared. And black boxes are supposed to withstand destruction. Just don't understand it. And the airplane at Shanksville, I remember when that happened, there were military commentators who said the debris field at the Shanksville site was consistent with a plane that was shot down. That was the debris field. And it was not consistent with an airplane crash site. So, questions, 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 conflicting information, conflicting statements. It's hard to understand. And for people like me who have curiosity and people like you who would ask the questions and investigate the answers, there's just a lot of things that don't make sense. Not just about the 9/11 event or the firefighters in California. Speaking about firefighters, there were firefighters for truth, and they were people who did not believe the official story of the 9/11 event. Right along with that group, there was a group that was asking the same kind of questions, and it was the 9/11 group of architects and engineers for truth. And there were 400 members of that group at one point, and I think it only grew. I don't know what it's doing nowadays, but at that time, there were 400 architects and engineers who said that the Twin Tower event of 9/11 could not have happened the way that they said it happened. The official story could not have existed. And I remember at that time, the architect for the Twin Towers was on the television, and he said each tower was designed to withstand multiple airplane strikes and still remain standing. And then you have Building 7 that collapsed in the same way as those two that were hit by the planes. The collapse of all those three towers, buildings, were at nearly free fall speeds. That's another thing that doesn't make sense. Free fall is when you get something big, like let's just call it a boulder, and you go to the top of the towers and you drop it. It would have taken 10... Now, this is my recollection. It's close, but it's not exactly this. It's close. So if you were at the top of those towers and you dropped a boulder, it would have taken 10 seconds to hit the ground. And my recollection, on average thinking, was that the buildings, instead of taking 10 seconds to hit the ground, took 13 seconds. So that's almost no resistance. And ask yourself, how could a steel-constructed building have no resistance to its collapse and fall? It just doesn't make sense. You know, there have been steel structures all over the world that have caught on fire, and they didn't fall. They were simply remodeled. Even if they burned for days, they were still left standing, and they were remodeled. In fact, in 100 years of steel-framed buildings, some of them, like I said, they have burned for days, and yet there were only 3 buildings which collapsed. And all 3 were in the same city, New York City, and they all happened on the same day. Ha! Amazing, isn't it? So, yes, I do have questions, and I don't have the answers, but if you don't look, you don't ask the questions, and you're not available to see the answers. So that's for those Twin Towers. That's for the fires in all around the areas, all around the country. And it's okay to ask the questions. There are questions. And I think we think about things and we try to understand. That's what we do. Well, I think back to those fires, and it makes me think of how under ex-President Reagan, he wanted to have a laser space defense. And he developed that. He developed the Strategic Defense Initiative, and that was called the Star Wars Initiative. It was in 1983. The program was expanded to have more money and more research done on it. I remember that somewhere right around 1990, I talked with an engineer who was a Silicon Valley engineer, and he was working on those kind of projects. He certainly did not tell me much, but he told me a little bit. It was pretty clear that there were different kinds of projects that he was working on, from rail guns to lasers. And And that was almost 30 years ago. 30 years ago. So just think of how much advancement they could have made in the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, wow. So much could have happened. Laser research could have expanded amazingly. So I remember at that time that there was discussion about how to cripple our enemies in the battlefields. And a part of it was to catch fire to the areas that they were in. And that would include catching all their buildings. I said buildings. I meant to say vehicles. Catching all their vehicles on fire and having the area where the troops were located, catching all that on fire too. Have an inferno. And that's what some of the thinking was at that time. That's what they were trying to create in their military systems and with warfare experiments. So that's what they were trying to do. And nations are allowed to experiment on their own people and test systems on their own country, just not on other country, because that's war. But if you do it to your own citizens, the international law allows that. So it just questions again, how do we actually look at these things, and how can we even believe that people think like that? I don't know. But those kind of thoughts, they go from one place to another with me. And so I talk about that, and my next thought is in 1950. There was a release, the United States Navy in 1950 released two different bacterias over the San Francisco Bay Area to observe how the bacteria would travel among a population, how far it would go, how quickly it would spread. And the bacteria was relatively not very harmful, and it was a test. They were testing it on their own population. It seems like all of us who have lived in the Bay Area in the past still have that in our bodies. So as long as we are healthy, I don't think it affects us, but we do have that bacteria in our bodies. So, yeah, just stay healthy. Well, stay healthy anyway. That's the best thing we can do for all of these things. Be careful what we eat. Be careful. Just be careful. But it's an example of the military performing a test on the unsuspecting American population. And like I said, that was the 1950s. Thinking back to the 1950s, I think of my father-in-law, who was one of several hundred men who took part in the testing of a thermonuclear explosion on human beings. So he was among the group of men who were assigned to be at the testing grounds with the nuclear explosion. And they did not have an option to either volunteer or to opt out of the test. They were simply assigned to witness the test of that thermonuclear hydrogen bomb. So they all went to the test site. They were taken in buses first, and then in open trucks, flatbed trucks. And then they went to the trenches that were already dug for them. That was 5 or 10 miles away from the blast, the nuclear blast, that they were witnessing to see what effect that it would have on actually troops stationed right next to that blast. What would happen? So they had this trench dug that was 4 or 5 feet deep, and the soldiers were instructed on what to do. They were to go into the trench, and there was a little outcropping so they could kind of sit down in place. And when the whistle blew, they were to put their hands over their eyes and just kind of be protected from the blast. So my father-in-law did what he was told and did it. And he remembers very clearly seeing the bones in his hand right through his closed eyes as he sat there in the trench and that thermonuclear hydrogen bomb went off. What an experience. It sure made an impression on him. After that happened, those men were ordered into the trucks again. They were flatbed open trucks where they sat in the back of, and they were brought to about 5 miles away from where that bomb blast exploded. And they checked the radioactivity level with their meter, and they decided that was close enough. And the flatbed trucks turned around, went back to where their buses let them off, and they all returned to their normal assignments again, back to their military bases. So my father-in-law, as far as anyone could tell, never did have any ill effects from that exposure to the thermonuclear hydrogen bomb blast. And so I have to use this as an example to say that a nuclear blast is survivable. We have people who have had that experience of surviving, just like he did and others did. So if we ever do have a thermonuclear blast, remember that it is survivable. Don't give up. Remember, you can survive. And sure, he was a strong Christian man, and I trust that you are too. And maybe that was a part of his healthy survival. He lived well into his 80s with no ill effects, so it can be done. Well, he's gone to heaven, and I'll be glad to see him when I do. But remember, you can live to a ripe old age with no ill effects. So this illustrates that nuclear events are survivable, and I'm glad to tell you about that, because there's too many people who think that, oh, a nuclear bomb went off and so we're all going to die. Nope. Sure, it can have an effect on each one of us, but it also is very survivable. He is evidence of that, and so are other men in his group. There are tests that our government has done on our civilian population without our knowledge. They've done it on the military population, and they've done tests on our civilian population. It's not that I want to get onto that subject. It's only that things do happen without our knowledge or permission in the military and in civilian life. So I know one example of that is the military vaccinations that our soldiers got in the Gulf War for anthrax. It was an experimental vaccine, but they all got it. It contained squalene from shark cartilage. So we do have experiments done to us. And as far as I'm concerned, the vaccines that we give our babies are also experiments. We require that our children get vaccinations, and do you know what's in them? Well, I've looked. I've looked, and I've been surprised. And it's no surprise that people get contaminated with all sorts of things. I think that there's a question about whatever is in them. It's surprising, the list of things. I'm not surprised that people suspect vaccinations of causing Down syndrome. It's a question. I don't understand it, but I do have serious concerns about it. So I'm one of those people who do not agree that vaccinations are safe and effective. Nope, I don't. And I've talked about vaccinations before. Let's see, it was 11-11-17. That's when I talked about that on that broadcast of 11/11/17 about vaccinations and how there is things going on and contamination in the vaccines, which would cause sterility in women. That was one of the things that the Philippine High Court looked into, and they made a ruling against the World Health Organization. If you look into it, you'll see it too. Right about now, there is another accusation. It was made by Kenya just recently about the vaccines that were made causing infertility in their women. In the Philippines, it was found that the vaccinations contained a human hormone, HGC, and this effectively made the women infertile. Oh, but look at, if you are interested, listen to that 11/11/17 broadcast of Christ Today. It was in the second half of it. So, back to the main point, because I kind of got distracted here. That sometimes happens to me. But there are testings that happen to our government, our military, our civilian people, and it's just something to be aware of. Things happen, and we don't want to get caught into, well, anything that's trouble. And I know that makes me think of Psalm 27:12, that it admonishes us that a prudent man, which would be a wise man, sees an evil trouble coming and hideth himself. But the simple pass on and are punished. Now, I think we can take that and use it as an example to say, be prudent, look at what might be coming our way, and hide yourself from that trouble. Don't be like the simple who don't see it, because the simple pass on and are punished. That's Psalm 27:12. So look at the dangers that are around. Look at what to investigate further, because nobody likes trouble. See how you can avoid that trouble. And none of these things am I in the position to really know what the details are of the programs, but I see indicators and I point them out to you. I think it would be good for you to look them up yourself. Look up the different things that could affect your life, your children's lives, your grandchildren's life, and then you decide for yourself and try to figure out how you can explain your concerns to the people around you, to your own family. It's not always easy to do. Nope, it's not easy. But figure it out. See what you can do. Examine what those potential problems are and see what you can do about them. I know I've looked into the flu vaccine before, and I understand that you can get it without the thimerosal in it, so, but it's not easy to do. I wouldn't want thimerosal in my vaccinations, because thimerosals is 49% mercury. And, you know, we're not supposed to touch mercury, let alone pump it into our blood with a vaccination. So that's a word of caution. They do change the vaccination contents from time to time, but I haven't seen any changes that indicate that our flu vaccines don't have mercury in them. So, yep, I don't want it in my blood. Anyway, look for yourself. Don't take anyone's word for it. I know as I have looked into this, I have gotten different information from different people. But get more information than whatever your doctor says. Get more information than from whatever the clinicians say. The information is available if you look it up. And, well, it sure surprised me, so I think it'll surprise you. What is in our vaccinations? It's not anything I like. And I don't like unpleasant surprises, so I just urge you to look for yourself. We're supposed to look at ourselves. Look for ourselves at the things around us and make our own decisions for what we see and understand and interact with. Yep. So I hope you do look. I do. So there's things going on around us. You know, with the fires, I think I will say this too. There are people who believe that those are from directed energy weapons. Wow, I don't know about this. I don't have enough information. But I don't mind having someone tell me an idea so that I can be aware of it in the future. Now, the people who have that idea, they supposedly have information. It's not proof, but it is a direction of thought. And I think it's okay to look into direction of thought, especially when they have the details, which they talk about, and how some manufacturer, as I recall, it was Boeing, who was putting forth information, films to the military, and there was a question of, was it a Hercules modified transport, C-138? You know, who do you believe? I don't know that I can believe any of it, but there's some things that make sense if you look. And it's not that I advocate it, but I say there are people who have a reasonable line of thinking. So consider it and be aware for the future that you can consider further information on what if it's true. There's a lot of areas to research. Look at your public areas of research and do have a look. Oh, and if you want to, you can tell me what you think too. You might have some information. I'm certainly glad to get it. Yep. I don't mind the help in having looks at the subjects that I try to understand. There's a lot to understand, and I don't think I do. But I get suspicions, and I get questions, and I get indicators of what directions things are going. And that's what I try to convey to you. Because you don't want to be ignorant, my brethren. Nope, you don't. Be not ignorant. And remember, we are in a spiritual battle. And a part of that spiritual battle affects us in our mind, our emotions, and our bodies. Because a part of that battle is physical. And we just get to try to figure it out as we go along. So, and then we try to also be that Christian man or woman, that Christian who is interacting with society, trying to figure it out, and show compassion, show love for other people. And a part of that love and compassion is just to give people a little sense of that they're human and they have a dignity. And let them know they are appreciated for who they are. And it's not that they're anything, have to be any great person. It's just that they're a human being and they deserve an element of love and respect. So remember that as you relate to people. We do try to figure things out and try to understand what's important. And like I've said, I'm always glad to hear what you have to say. You can contact me, and always you can get my free information, which is that preparedness pamphlet. And I encourage you to do that, because all the thinking you do in that direction, I think, is good. We don't know what to prepare for, but yeah, get my preparedness pamphlet. Write to me at John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. That's John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. So, I usually say that at the end of the program, and we are not at the end yet, but it just kind of fit in there, so I said it. There's all sorts of things that we have to be aware of, and I think it only makes sense that we look a little further. We have things that are we confront or that confront us, and we don't know where they lead. I know there's a lot of talk these days about cybersecurity and how the different areas of our lives are hacked and looked into. And I think that's a reasonable thing to look into. We can look at the dangers that there are and try to recognize what a protection would be if we were to have protection. And a part of that is to ask yourself, who is doing the computer hacking? And I know we have heard that Russia is invading our cybersecurity. Well, they are doing a little bit of it, according to the Security Today magazine. And they gave a list of the countries that are doing the cyber attacks on America. And I'm going to look at that, and here it is. I'm going to read it to you. China, 41%. Turkey, 20%. The United States, 17%. Brazil, 8%. Russia, 4%. And all other nations, 9%. So, yes, indeed, there is computer hacking going on. And we do need to be aware that our cyber systems are being attacked. But listen, who is that again? China, 41%. Turkey, 20%. From within the United States, 17%. Brazil, 8%. Russia, 4%. And all other nations, 9%. So just have a look and see where the real threats are. We do have threats. We really do. But we have to have information so that we can assess the threats. There's too much going on for us to really have a clear understanding, but it doesn't mean we don't try to understand. We do try to understand. We try to figure things out. And often enough, we don't have enough time to look into matters thoroughly. I think we're always it's always a good idea to look and look thoroughly. And if we can't do anything else, I think it's a good idea to look at those two great commandments. They were written in Matthew 22:37. And in the words of Jesus, it reads, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And this is the first and great commandment. The second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So, if we would just follow those two laws, can you imagine? We would have such a loving and compassionate world. We would not need all the laws that we have, because people would be obeying those two laws, the laws of loving God and loving your neighbor. So, yeah, let's try to love our neighbor. Let's try to do this. Love God first, because if you do that, you are aware of your every interaction. Well, really throughout the day, of how you relate to God, how you love God, and how you relate to the people around you, whether it's a neighbor or a passerby. And I just think that those are good things to do. So those two laws, they have a lot to say. I think there's all sorts of things we can think about and things that we can do. We interact with people and we get to try to figure out how to do it. How do we prepare for whatever's coming, especially when we don't know what it is or when it will happen? Hey, here's a big thought for you. It has to do with a guarantee that has been made that life will continue as it is for 5 more years. Just think, 5 more years, we can relax. Nothing else is going to happen. No electrical outages, no hurricanes, and the banks will stay open for 5 years. The stock thing will be good. Just think, no hurricanes, no earthquakes. But you know that nobody can make this guarantee. Nobody can guarantee that. And that's why we look at the just in case and we try to figure things out. There is no guarantee. And anything can happen today, tomorrow, or in 5 years or 25 years. Don't know means don't know, and that means things can happen any time at all. So have a look and see what you need to do to get your things in order, to get your life in order for that just-in-case situation. You can see that we all have something that we can do, and who knows what it is, but there is something. Preparedness is good, and you don't know what it would be. But food and water, those are things we will always use. I like flashlights too. But there's a few things that just make sense, and I hope that you have a look and see what it is you can do. We all have certain things we want and we need, and one of them is also a dependable vehicle. And this is where I'm going to just talk for a minute. This will be a commercial for AMSOIL, because they help your car to do well. It's a commercial. AMSOIL, oil and lubricants are good for your vehicle. So call your local AMSOIL representative, Joe DeDuca, at 530-877-6842. Joe DeDuca, 530-877-6842. You might have a custom car, you might have a construction vehicle, or a farm implement. AMSOIL is good for all your vehicle needs, and they have top quality lubricants for your vehicle needs. For information on this, again, for your AMSOIL representative, Joe DeDuca, call 530-877-6842. And until next week, walk with God, and may He walk with you. Consider your preparedness needs for all these things. Thank you for listening today.